Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening each and every week. We bring to you information about what goes on in the mortgage market. Lots goes on all the time. I don't know if that's a correct English statement, but like the mortgage market itself, things change and fluctuate, as does the way I approach the show and the information that I bring to you. As you do in your life, at your job, and things that you bring, your creative side as well as the practical side, have to match up. Well, in the mortgage market, it is trying to do that right now. And whether we're self-sized, meaning that what we have is what we got, or we're looking at down the road to when taper will happen and when the rates will rise. So the world economy, what's happening out there, is really affecting many, many different things in the financial world, but the mortgage market has remained reliably steady, and that is part and parcel to what we're going to talk about today. I got a great guest, good lineup today, bringing people in to talk about mortgages, programs, and what you can expect probably through the fall. What is it, Darryl? The first day of fall was this week, so...
Wednesday,
okay. Well, we're on Wednesday anyway.
22nd.
Oh, okay, very good. So... this means that obviously the second quarter will be done, and where we're heading for the third and fourth quarter. I know many people have already purchased their house. They're into their house. We're going to talk some about where the housing starts were, where they are, where forbearance is, where it was, where it is today, what we can expect in the markets, what we can expect in housing. But first off, we bring to you from five stations in three different states. We're in Southern California, of course, is our base, and we branch out to Albuquerque, New Mexico. I want to say hi to our friends down there in Cayman Country. I really appreciate the work they do to bring our show to you each and every weekend. Also up at Cape Tahoe, say the hi to the folks up there. Hopefully the fires. How are the fires doing up there? Are they finally out or?
Yeah, they're pretty much gone, and they really didn't hit the main part of town. So,
oh, that's good.
That's good, but people on the outskirts felt the effects.
I see. Okay, well, that's a good thing. Obviously, anybody that's been watching the fires knows that it's one of the things that we take for granted, especially when we're not in an area that is affected by certain types of weather. Out west, there's been fires this year, certainly in the southeast and the Midwest has been flooding, lots of flooding, and we'll see what the winter has. We're scheduled to have an El Nino year, so in the West that means we're not going to have a very wet year, but in the East and in the Midwest, down south, I'm not quite sure. I just don't know enough about it, but weather issues do affect your loan. They do affect when you're going to close. They do affect the purchase of your property, so you want to make sure that when you are in those positions where you can try to find out what's going to happen if, i.e., if there's, you know, a problem with flooding, if there's a fire, if there's earthquakes, if there's other things that can affect, i.e., weather, you want to make sure that your loan is going to close, or what is the procedure if, in fact, you get into a situation like that? What are you going to do, and how are you going to do it? You want to talk to your loan officer, your real estate agent, your lender. All of these people will have some idea as to what happens. Normally, in a situation where weather affects, there is a second appraisal order, at least a drive-by, to make sure the properties are still in pretty good shape, and that's probably what's going to happen at best. At worst, it'll be a hold. To make sure that the infrastructure in the neighborhood is the same. People don't realize it, but when you live in a certain area, there is infrastructure way beyond your house, which affects not only the value, but also the risk of a lender to be able to lend money. Whether you're in a city, an area that has a sewer line. In parts of the country, one of the parts of the country where I live, the county sends out an inspector to make sure the connection between your system and the sewer is right. So if you have an earthquake or a flood or some kind of other related incident that might affect that connection, it may hold up your loan unless you get a city inspector or a private inspector to go out there and certify that that connection is in fact made. Lots of things to consider during weather events. We also want to say hey to, I said Albuquerque, our friends down in Albuquerque, Cayman, of course, and let's see, where else? Oh, Las Vegas, Nevada, of course. AM 1400, Nice people out there. We were just in Las Vegas last week. We're shooting a couple of different shows, as we often do. We bring those shows to you on air, whether it's local or hopefully a more regional or national aspect to it. Let's get right to rates. What are the rates today? And the Fed Open Market Committee meeting happening, talking about taper. So the 30-year fixed rate loan, we're averaging about 3%. 15 years at 2.45. The FHA is at 2.64. The jumbo is at 3.09. And the 5-1 ARM is at 2.63. The 10-year yield is at 1.319. Now, that number, as well as most of these rates, really haven't changed more than 10 or 15 basis points for the last 3 months. We've been in this hurry-up-and-wait mode, waiting to see how many people came out of forbearance, how many people were affected when the unemployment benefits ran out, how many people were affected when other events that the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, the Fed, whether they're going to taper, and that taper that we talk about often as the catalyst for raising rates maybe this year, but certainly late this year, probably, and early next year. And they will stop buying as many mortgage-backed securities and as many treasuries as they are currently buying. Now, as everyone knows, they're buying $120 billion a month, split up 80-40, rather. That's a lot, but it has held interest rates to where they are. Now, there's a great debate out there, and we talk about it, and I'm going to talk about it again, whether inflation or taper is the way to go, and how do we handle that? How do we look at opportunities for your mortgage to be affordable if we raise rates? How can that happen? We would have to see, obviously, the increase in your income if you're in the margins where right now you're struggling to make a payment on a 3% mortgage. Obviously, if that raises next year to 3.5%, you're out of luck. You're not going to be able to afford a house because you're right there on the margin. Now, the government wants to add to the housing market, right? The whole point of what they do to try to maintain affordability and to grow the housing, actual number of houses on the market, is about making sure that if you want a house and you're working full-time, you can afford a house. There's a thing called a livable wage. Everybody knows what that is. Most jobs out there, there are the 10 million jobs that are still not yet filled. Again, another one of these debates between unemployed and employed, whether it's the checks going out there or whether it's just the fact that nobody wants those jobs, even if the checks stopped. Well, we're going to find that out very, very, very quickly because right now, and I think it's the end of the month, we're going to stop all payments on any extended unemployment benefits. Certainly the states are, and I think the federal government has already begun to stop that. And I think there's very few states left that actually do that. Some states have picked up the slack, California being one of them, and have issued some state unemployment benefits to match or at least try to supplement. But for the most part, what we have is employment versus unemployment. We have inflation versus taper. These are the things that will affect the rate eventually, depending on the outcome of what happens in those events. These are not political by nature. They're made political because it's easy to target and talk about giveaways as a problem to anybody. But in those states which ended unemployment benefits 2 months ago, there has been no uptick in employment, i.e., people who lost their benefits didn't rush back to work. And as I said, those unemployment numbers where we have 10 million jobs available and 8.5 million people out of work, those don't jive. All of these things are going to affect mortgage interest rates and demand on housing. What happens to those people? We have a problem, obviously, currently, because we don't have enough people who want to go back to work at these type of jobs. The problem is not that they don't want to go back to work, but we don't have money pouring into the system to pay for things like infrastructure, to pay for things like Social Security, to pay for things like unemployment benefits. So what happens in a case like that is the government has to borrow more money, whether it's state, local, or federal. That can't be a good thing, except in this environment, what we have seen is that it doesn't really hurt either. So, and when I talk about this environment, let's talk about this environment since the Reagan era. Oh, I see we're up against the clock. I apologize about that. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening each and every week. We bring to you, as you know, guests and people in the industry who can tell you more than I know. And that's really the best part of what I do, is to bring and entertain for you good people who know the business and know what to tell you about either getting a loan or what to look for or where the rates are, what kind of programs might fit you. You know, when you're out there and you're shopping around for a loan officer, best thing to do is to make sure you talk to two or three people, not just some recommendation from Uncle Billy. And one of the things you want to ask them is their experience, of course, how long they've been doing it, where they've been doing it, you know, the other things that may be personal to you, like, you know, do you ask questions of your lender rather than just take the program? Do you seek out the best program for me rather than just taking what's in front of you? These are all about getting you the best deal possible. One great person who does that for Malibu Funding is Jennifer Conrad, and she joins us now. Jennifer, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me back.
Thank you very much for coming on. How have you been?
Doing great. Waiting for the summer to go out and fall to come in and staying busy, so things are good.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's talk a little bit about the business. You do loans a lot of different places in a lot of different states. What is going on in the mortgage marketplace by way of business? Is it busy? Is it slowed down? Where are we?
Actually, it's busy. It seems like rates are still, you know, fairly low. Actually, I just priced out a loan 2 minutes ago, so still rates in some cases below 3%. You know, obviously, depending on if we're looking at a conventional or, you know, some of the non-conforming deals, but those are available. I also am noticing a lot more people who are interested in some of the non-traditional type loans, where we're doing bank statement programs, and some of the lenders are a bit more aggressive with those programs, you know, whereas it's always been in the past, you might have to produce 12 or 24 month bank statements. In some cases now, we have 3 month bank statements and even a 1 month bank statement program.
Okay, now, we know that the rates are going to rise because the taper is about to happen, and the pull between inflation and free money by the Fed has come to a point where the inflation hawks are ruling. How is this going to affect borrowers in these programs? You talk about non-traditional. Are we going to see more of that, you think, because of the fact that rates might go up?
I think it really depends. I mean, we might have more people who are going to need non-traditional loans, but we also might have people who are still able to purchase on a regular conforming loan as long as they're not trying to max out what is the maximum amount that they qualify for. Usually when I'm qualifying a borrower, I like to make sure that I leave some leeway there so that if for some reason we have something that happens last minute, maybe, you know, something ended up getting paid late by accident and we end up having a ding as far as like on the credit report, because a lot of times, you know, we have to pull a refresh just before we close. And if that's the case, I mean, it could take them out of one bracket, let's say for a rate that's at like, you know, 2.75, and maybe now they're at 3.5, and that can make all the difference in the world. So as long as we're not maxing them out and we're allowing space for that, I think, you know, it might be a situation where maybe people won't buy as much house, maybe you won't qualify for $800,000, but you'd qualify for $600,000. But I mean, I still think, you know, there's a way, whether it's going that way if rates are going up, or if there's an option also to do the bank statement programs. The only thing with the bank statement programs is the rates are generally going to be higher because it is considered non-traditional.
Well, non-traditional plus more risk. I think when borrowers understand, and I always ask them, I say, hey, look, if you were lending money to me and I was to show you what you're trying to show me and wanting the best possible rate, could you see why, you know, I might have to pay a little bit more money? Most people, if they're honest with themselves, would say, yeah, I can understand that there's more risk in this type of loan than, you know, a traditional 80-20 conventional loan with an 800 FICO score. Yeah, I can see that.
And it's a little bit more money. Most of the non-traditionals you are going to. I mean, there are a few lenders that will take 80, maybe 85, but in most cases, we're looking at 70, 75% loan to value. So you're putting 25 to 30% down.
Well, I think, okay, let's talk properties in general. A report came out from Freddie Mac about appraisals and the difficulty of getting appraisals in some neighborhoods and the difference in the appraisal values. Have you had any problems with that this year?
I've had a lot of that.
Yep.
Right now, first of all, it's difficult to even get an appraisal back within 30 days because the appraisers are busy. But then the other thing is I literally had one file that I had to move. We had already ordered one appraisal. We were at a point where it was going to expire because the borrower had had some things going on, so we had to kind of put it on hold for a minute. When we went back and then we had another appraisal done, a different appraiser came back with a number that seemed, you know, incredibly low.
Right.
The lender said, you know, we're going to need to have a desk review. Went back, had a desk review. All of a sudden, then they said we need to have a drive-by. So we now have four reports on this one property. And when we got the drive-by done, it came back, like, outrageously, almost like $100,000 more than every other report we had. And so at that point, the lender's like, well, you know, there's really nothing we can do with it because we can't really size it up other than to go with the lowest value. And, of course, the borrower was like, no, I don't want to do that when, you know, the second appraisal is less than what we originally started with. So, I mean, in that case, it is. And I'm even noticing with a few purchases, you know, having to go back and do some renegotiation on the sales price because the value is not there, and I just can't justify, you know, supporting a borrower purchasing something if the value is not there and they're already starting out with negative equity. So,
now, do you do AVMs, i.e. check the value of the properties prior to doing anything, or is that not something that we do that often?
Sometimes, me personally, I will go to different places like Chase.com, or I'll go to Zillow, you know, and just try to get an idea of what it is that I'm working with. And in particular, if I'm doing refinances, for sure. But with a purchase, I might check that.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of cases, you know, it's not necessary because we already know that if it's a situation where the value's not there, you know, most sellers are not going to want to lose the deal. So if there's some room for negotiation, then, you know, I leave that part to the real estate agents to do.
Okay, that's a good point. From yourself as a lender, let's say a property value comes in lower than expected, but in the contract it says the buyer has to make up the difference. Does that affect the overall approval of the loan?
I don't think it necessarily affects the approval as long as the lender can verify that the borrower has additional funds to be able to cover that.
I see.
I just haven't experienced any borrower that would want to do anything like that, because if you leave it open to say, hey, you know, you're going to cover it if the value doesn't come in, you know, you really don't know how much you're going to be working with if that's the case.
No, so, I agree with you. I've heard in certain circumstances where, you know, you're fighting 10 other people for the property, this is what, you know, it came down to. Maybe this was a few months ago, but I was curious to see how you thought that would go if the lender would, you know, accept the value and the fact that the borrower's got to come in with more money. As long as they can prove it, it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I've experienced that in the past where, you know, you've had borrowers who say, you know, I still absolutely want this property.
Right.
You know, and a lender will say, that's fine. I mean, we're still only going to lend on what the value is. As long as you understand that, then as long as you provide an addendum or, like in this case you're talking about, you know, and it says there, hey, you're going to pay the difference, and we can verify that you have those funds, then they're fine. I mean, that's, you know, your additional money that you want to put in, but the lender is only willing to take the amount of risk that they originally agreed upon based upon their terms.
Right. No, it's always fascinating to me, especially with the appraisals. This summer has been rough. Listen, we have about a minute left. If you want to tell people how they can get a hold of you, you do loans all over the country. You're a terrific loan officer. How do they get in touch with you?
You can reach me. My number is 773-593-6831.
Excellent. Jennifer, thanks very much for coming on the show. Once again, great information. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. That's Jennifer Conrad of Malibu Funding. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening each and every week as we try to bring you some information about mortgages, about refinances, about purchases, about investment properties. What else is there? There's commercial properties. There's commercial real estate. There's all kinds of things that you need to find financial information about, even in a market where property values have really skyrocketed. Now, we've seen 20% over the last 2 years in some areas. Some areas a little bit less, but not that much less. So getting into the real estate market now may seem a little out of your reach. It's not. It's about the payments on a monthly basis. Can you afford that? Interest rates are still smoking low, so I wanted to bring on a guy who would probably be able to ferret out the best mortgage for you better than anybody I've seen in the industry. He works for Malibu Funding. It's Luke Mankey. Luke, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. I'm good. Thanks for having me back on.
Thank you very much for coming on. I do appreciate that. Okay, give us your overall assessment of your business and the market and where we stand today.
Well, it's like what you opened up with. It's still plenty busy. And even though everyone, or not everyone, but so many people have refinanced into all these conventional loans and got the sub-3s on that, you got this non-QM sector, which is kind of like an all-pay, and that's just booming right now with either investors that maybe don't quite show enough money, but they have the capital, so they're buying. You don't need any income doc or tax returns. You just need strong market rents to offset the mortgage payment on those. And heck, you got really good options for self-employed people out there that, again, like always, don't show as much income as maybe they make on their taxes, but you've got alternative options with bank statements and, heck, even a couple lenders out there that are doing, you don't even need bank statements. You just need credit, equity, capital, and you just need a strong, like, a good loan of value. I mean, they can be self-employed and they don't even have to provide any tax returns. If it's a primary residence, we can get it. No income doc, no employment. So all that sector is booming right now. We're really busy with it.
Okay, so
crazy time.
I like that sector, and I like it for a lot of different reasons. Even people who have, good credit, good income, can show it all on their tax returns, might not want to show it all and might want to be able to just do bank statements on their business to get a loan, even though it might cost them a little bit more. But what is the cost, really, based on today's mortgage rates? Let's call them 3%, a little under 3%. What's it going to cost you, another half a point on a loan like that? Another point? So is it really that much more?
No, it's not. And the gains, I mean, how many times I hear them say, like, look, if I'm saving $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 or more in IRS, taxes to the IRS,
right,
I'd way rather save that and I'll pay whatever, a couple thousand, whatever, a few hundred dollars more a month. I get to deduct that anyways, whether if it's a rental, you're deducting on the Schedule E, or if it's your primary, you're just deducting the mortgage interest for as long as we can do that. Who knows how long that'll be. But, the benefits far outweigh the negatives in that aspect, taking a little bit of a higher interest rate.
Talk about a little about the income market, about rentals. Are we seeing an uptick in purchase of those kind of properties, or is it remain flat? Do you know?
I think tough to speculate, but from what I'm seeing, there's not much inventory.
Right.
So all my investor clients are buying up whatever they can secure. Rents on some are not coming in as strong as they would hope, but I think that's just all of, that's this COVID thing that's kind of protecting all of the tenants right now, which doesn't seem like it's going to be, that's going away. And
it is.
I think very soon very soon. I think that's going to correct itself, and then they're all going to be happy with all the homes that they bought this year, because that what was $3,000 a month is now going to become $4,500 a month if they're going to be getting in rent and, you know, on your average Southern California property. So,
right.
I think it's still a strong market. I can't. It's hard to poke holes. I've been trying to poke holes for a year. And, like, you know, is there a bubble? But, man, all these standards and everything that we're having to abide by, it's all there. Like,
you think this, Luke, you think this Evergrande thing in China is going to affect us here? You think it'll bleed through?
I don't know. I really don't know. Admittedly, I had a client tell me yesterday he was worried about this China thing, and I didn't even know because I just had my head stuck in a computer doing all work. And so I'm not even, I don't even feel properly equipped to comment on that.
Right. No, I understand. It's just a huge real estate company may default on, you know, $305 billion that they owe, and the ripple effects in the marketplace, because about a week after that, they owe another $200 billion. And this is one of the larger real estate holding companies in China. And so what does this mean for, you know, not only investment there, but is this more of a, you know, a foretelling of things to come all over, as was the mortgage meltdown back in 08? Which, of course, this resembles nothing like that. This is all self-induced stuff. This isn't about bad loans. This is just about, can we get the economy back to a point whereby everybody who has to pay a mortgage is getting the rent, which, again, we talk about renters, you know, not having the ability to go out there and not pay rent for a while. And I'm rooting, I don't know if this makes me evil, but I'm rooting for the landlord.
Yeah, they got all the liability. They got to make a payment, too. It's not like, I mean, I don't personally, I mean, you and I don't deal with people that have millions of dollars to pay all cash for this stuff. They're all getting financing, which makes them largely hardworking, average, normal Americans.
Right.
So, yeah, they're financing that investment. They're taking a massive risk. They got to make the payment. They're not getting paid rent. Why is it fair for us to punish them for working hard? And I'm 100% on their side.
Right.
I mean, there's a human aspect of it. Of course, you don't want anyone to be homeless.
Of course.
But, yeah, they got to pay the mortgage or they're going to default.
Well, I just, you know, and I'm not one to point fingers and say, oh, people are taking advantage. But people, some are taking advantage. And those people who need to pay rent so that the mortgage holder can pay their notes so they don't lose the property. Do you see any of that happening, any foreclosures? Really? I know that there's about 1.5 million properties still in forbearance on the traditional side, about 3%. So what do you think?
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of shadow inventory out there. I think it's going to be interesting. I've talked to a couple of their self-employed clients that have still struggled all through COVID. The majority of them are on their feet, but I'm starting to see this trend of them still kind of struggling and being concerned about, am I going to be able to afford to keep this place? I think I'm a little in over my head. And so there just has to be some sort of a wave of inventory coming that is going to soften these prices a little bit, or just whatever. Is there going to be a dip? I don't know. But I think... Yeah, I mean, I don't know, and I hate to speculate because everyone that is a professional at speculating never seems to be perfectly correct.
Why can't we do it? Jeez. Yeah. I've seen all the shows. We're as good as that. So, yeah, I think softening of real estate prices is needed. Expansion of inventory is needed. Now, whether that comes in the form of raising interest rates and having foreclosures, or it's, you know, build more houses and, you know, have more people make more money. I don't know what the formula exactly is, but everybody wants the same thing. They want more houses and lower prices.
Yeah, this is off topic, but I'll tell you. So for 2 months, my wife has worked for like 20 years for Warner Brothers, and now she's exited from that. And so I can work pretty much from anywhere, and we have an RV. And so for like 6-7 weeks this summer, we moved around and drove, and I worked remotely, and I didn't really skip a beat. I had my Wi-Fi, and I had my dual monitor set up and a little Costco folding desk, and we made it work. And it was difficult at times, but I'm saying this because we went through all these mountain towns in Arizona, in Colorado, Wyoming, Jackson Hole, like all these, and like to see the amount of construction going on and building and really lack of affordable housing. Like you're saying we need more inventory or need more new construction. I don't know where the heck we're going to do that in Southern California. There's only so much.
No, not here.
Building and developing Riverside. But it's an interesting time right now to see what's going on and what used to be these tropical, not tropical, not the right word, but like these highly sought after like oases of mountain towns that were quiet, and now they're just bustling because
right.
everyone can work remotely.
No, I agree, and I know people that go to Jackson Hole just say hate it. There's too many people who are coming from out of Jackson Hole making it, you know, instead of 13,000, you know, 18,000 people, and it's just now they got traffic, they got to put in new lights. Listen, Luke, I'm up against it. Tell people how they can get in touch with the best loan officer out there.
Thank you. Sure. You can reach me on my cell at 818-209-2592, and my email is luke.malibufunding@yahoo.com.
And people who are listening to Luke right now, just remember that he is able to do loans in many different states. So the fact that he's got a Southern California number doesn't mean he can't do loans in Washington State. Luke, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. That's Luke Mankey of Malibu Funding. I'm Jeff Parton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Parton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning back into the show. We bring to the show a lot of different people, and we try to do that because the information I have in my head is so limited. I need other people to come on and tell you about what's happening in the mortgage industry, what's happening with rates, what's happening with programs, where we might find ourselves in 6 months from now, and maybe some of the reasons why now's a good time to do it, or maybe wait. I mean, really, it just depends on you as a person and as a borrower, as well as, you know, the expertise of the people that we bring on the show. Today is no exception. We bring Tim Wise, the area manager for The Lender, which is a mortgage lender here in Southern California. But I think you reached, Tim, isn't it? Other states as well?
Yes, sir. We are in a total of 45 states.
Excellent. And again, Tim, thank you very much for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. This is Tim's first time, and if you'd like to see him during this interview, go to YouTube, and you can see this show as well as hundreds of others, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, and as I said, we do I haven't done it in a while, but usually on LinkedIn or Facebook, we do a Mortgage Minute two or three times a week. We're on Instagram occasionally, as well as 10 different podcasts and 5 different radio stations. So, Tim, I just wanted to ask you quickly just to describe what The Lender does, where their particular area of expertise is, and how you're helping borrowers currently today.
Sure. Well, The Lender was established in 2018. We are a division of Hometown Equity Mortgage. We are a wholesale mortgage company where we service mortgage brokers in the communities. We do everywhere from agency of Fannie and Freddie loans to government loans to non-QM as well as investor-only programs. So we offer a wide variety of programs for the broker community out there.
And in your experience, what do you think currently would be the program that most people are coming to you for, or is it still everything?
It is a little bit of everything, okay. But I would say I could pinpoint 3 different programs, mainly that it's brokers, the broker community coming to me for. The first would be the NADA, which is exclusive to The Lender. It's a 100% FHA program where the standard FHA loan is done at 96.5%, and then we lend the second 3.5%, which makes 100% financing. So it's a no money down program for the borrowers in the FHA community. And that is a hot program right now that brokers are taking advantage of.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Oh, absolutely. It's a really great program right now. One of the other programs is our bank statement program in non-QM that's servicing the self-employment community out there. That is a very, very strong program for them that just fall outside of doing full doc of conventional programming and stuff. So that's a good program out there that brokers are coming to us for. And the third program would be our NONI program, which mm-hmm. is a non-owner, no-income program. That's your traditional DSCR, where it's just a cash flow program. There's no employment and no income on it. It's just straight investor programs, but it's a great program. It has low rates, and it's a really good program for the investment community out there.
Let's talk a little bit about that NADA program. It caught my interest. I like it. I like it because we have a lot of borrowers who can afford monthly payments but just can't afford the down payment, even at 3.5%, because the prices have really skyrocketed in the last couple of years. Give us the real specifics about the cost, what documentation you might need, things like that.
It is a standard FHA program, so it's a four-doc program. There's no restrictions as far as income or employment or anything else. We strictly follow FHA guidelines. We follow DU for the DTI on that. So there's no restrictions at all on that program. We go down to a 580 credit score, and like I said, the max DTIs are per AUSDU. So if you get an approved eligible on it, we take it.
Okay. No, that's excellent. I like the fact that the second that you lend, now you lend it out, is there a blended rate that you use, and does that blended rate have to be approved by FHA as well?
No. So the second mortgage is strictly, it's a community second that's done by us. It is a 10-year fully amortized loan that's a 6% fixed.
Okay.
So that rate doesn't change. It's a fixed rate, and it's the same for everybody. Doesn't matter what your credit score is or anything. Everyone gets the 10-year loan, 6% fixed.
Okay. Now, let's say a borrower can bring in 1% of it. Would you lend less than that, or is it strictly a 3.5% loan?
Yes. So they don't have to take the whole 3.5%.
Okay.
But that whole 3.5% doesn't actually have to go to the down payment either. That can go towards closing costs or any other costs into that loan. So if the borrower has money for it, technically they can use that 3.5% to go towards other things.
Now, is this strictly for purchase or is it also refi?
This is a purchase program.
Okay. Excellent. In the purchase area, obviously being in 45 different states, you see requirements for homes in different parts of the country from the realtors. They're different, right? I mean, here in Southern California, where I live, it's very much a seller's market, or still is a seller's market, so you might see some contingencies removed. Do you see that in other areas when you see loans brought in? Obviously, when you're looking at a loan to do, you want to make sure that the purchase contract is correct. What are you seeing on purchase contracts in different parts of the country, which may be a little bit different than it is here locally?
So actually, it's a hot market across the nation right now,
right,
from Southern California to Texas to Florida to the Carolinas up to the Northeast, always and into Chicago. Everywhere you see it's a seller's market. There's not enough homes on the inventory. Buyers out there, prices are skyrocketing. You're having everyone bid on homes and you know have to come in with more than what the homes are valued at right now. So we're seeing a lot of heat from the seller market,
right,
from the selling realtors. They're just push to get things closed as fast as they can. Of course, lenders are still busy with purchases and refis, and we still have our turn times. We're trying to turn them as fast as we can. But it is definitely a seller's market out there for sure.
Have you seen any issues with appraisals across the country or here locally? The reason I ask is because there's been a few articles written by Fannie and Freddie just talking about the issues with appraisals, the difficulties in some markets versus others.
Well, I'm seeing difficulties in getting appraisals done in a timely fashion.
Okay.
We have some parts, for example, Florida, I know is taking about 3 weeks average time to get an appraisal done. I'm not sure. I think, California there is at least a couple weeks to get their appraisals done as well. So, and we're seeing that in Texas also. So it's definitely an issue with turn times on appraisals. We are seeing values not coming in, but that is also has a lot to do
right
with the inflation of the market. It's inflating a lot higher than they can keep up. So, the homes just have to sell, and as they go on record, that's when the values can start coming in. But we are definitely seeing, values that aren't coming to the purchase prices.
Oh, okay. And how do you all deal with that, especially if you've given an approval at a certain price? The appraisal comes in, and the price is either lower, a lot lower than what the purchase price is. Is it okay for the borrower to then say, okay, I found some extra money to pay the difference. I want to go forward with the current approval?
Right. So, yeah. So from a lender standpoint, we have to go off of the appraised value.
Okay.
And that's what we can lend off of. So if the borrower then has two choices. One is what normally happens. They go back to the negotiating table with the seller. A lot of times they can meet in the middle of it or whatever they can work out. If the seller stands put and the borrower still wants to buy that house, they can absolutely come in with the additional funds, but that's outside of the loan. So if it's $500,000 purchase price and it appraises at $490,000, that borrower would have to bring in an extra $10,000 on top of all the other costs.
And are you looking for sourced funds, and what kind of sourced funds? And, I mean, is that all included in that particular renegotiation, I guess, of the loan?
So we would have to source additional funds, and those type of funds can be gifted as well.
Okay, that's good.
So there are options for the borrower. They're not 100% stuck if they don't have the money. If their parents have money or other family members have money, they can gift them. They could come up with that as well.
Tim, we are against the clock. I appreciate you coming on the show. If you had a way by which people could get in touch with you with questions, how do they do that?
You can reach me at tim.wise@thelender.com, 704-309-7868.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I'd like to do it again, and appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
And thank you very much. That's Tim Wise. He's the area manager for The Lender. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, for listening to us each and every week, bringing you information about mortgages, purchase mortgages, refinance mortgages, looking for a mortgage because you want to buy a house in a certain amount of time, next year, year after. You want to see what the trend is. The best thing to do is to go to any mortgage rate site and look for a five-year trend. If you want to see how rates have been historically low for a long time now, I've given up trying to say when they're going to raise, but I do know they are going to raise, and they're going to raise soon. Reason is, taper's happening. Federal Open Market Committee meeting said so. So if it's $5 billion less a month or $10 billion less a month from either mortgage-backed securities or treasuries, it's happening, and it may take, you know, a pause or two to get to the final where there is no more Fed input on that. But that's one of the governors on inflation. We're also on a number of podcasts, and several of the podcasts that we're on, Daryl's going to give us a little bit of a list.
I have a little bit of a list. It is Apple Podcasts, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, YouTube, Podclips.io, and YouTube. I got YouTube twice.
Excellent. Well, that's because we're just twice as sweet. YouTube, if you go there, look up Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. The show is there along with hundreds of other shows. We have a number of how-to videos as well as a daily, although I haven't done the daily for a while. I've been away and traveling, and it's just so difficult to do 5 minutes a day, get it up, get it on all the social media sites. Anyway, LinkedIn, Facebook, yes, you can see those there, as well as what we have on YouTube for those particular daily shows, which are called The Mortgage Minute. We also, as I said, are on Podclips.io, great place to go and listen to new people that you haven't heard before in that particular space. Podcasting is fun, first of all, and second of all, you can hear some really amazing people. It's just you have to find out where they are. So Podclips.io, whether it's health, whether it's finance, whether it's sports, whether it's lifestyle, there's a number of different topics there that you can follow. Terrific speakers and people who know what they're talking about. So Podclips.io, go there. And let's just get right back to it. They're in China. Okay, so there's ongoing economic strife happening in China. And one of the reasons is, and one of the reasons we're going to follow it is because like in 2007, like in 2008, the cracks in the mortgage industry were first discovered here in the U.S., but they affected worldwide markets, i.e. the investment in the mortgage market place by foreign investors, whether it's foreign sovereign funds, whether it's hedge funds, whether it's just foreign countries per se, they invest in the mortgage marketplace. They buy the mortgage-backed securities because it's a hedge against their particular economies going up or down. China is having some difficulty. There's a very large real estate company out there called Evergrande. Evergrande is up against a payment which they may default on of $305 billion, and close thereafter is another $200 billion that they owe maybe a week later. It's an issue because real estate in general is how the U.S. backs a lot of what they do economically. Because, as I said, mortgage-backed securities, mortgages, there's trillions of dollars in equity in the mortgage, equity in homes in America, and that model has been followed around the world. So if a large, like one of the largest real estate holding companies, whether it's rental properties or commercial properties, defaults on their payments, what happens to the overall market in China? Well, we've been feeling the effects of that in the Chinese stock market, and there is a great deal of exposure, well, not a great deal, but certainly some exposure of American investors in the Chinese stock market, especially in companies like Evergrande, as the Chinese government continues to pull back on their overall outlook on capitalism versus socialism, i.e., not so much the front anymore, but certainly the back end. Companies like this expecting government bailouts may be in for a big surprise. We're going to wait and see. But if that happens, and why I bring it up is because it may affect what happens here in the U.S. The company is so big that certainly the ripple effect will be obviously stock price issues, but maybe liquidity issues as banks around the world hold on to what they have and stop lending, stop spending. This is a big deal, and you should be watching it because as China goes, it's probably going to affect markets not only in Europe, certainly the Far East, Far Asian markets, but certainly here in the United States, especially if we follow that same model, i.e., where are we in large real estate investment trusts or large real estate holding companies and their balance of payments on their debts. Very important. COVID has actually killed a lot of these businesses, small and medium size, which rent properties in large office buildings or in medium to small size office buildings. So what happens to the mortgagor, the person who needs to pay that mortgage? They have not been given a forbearance off-ramp. So they either pay or lose the property. And if a large company who holds mortgages on a number of large buildings, as well as tremendous amount in the real estate market, if that, in fact, happens, as it has happened here in the U.S., as it has happened in China, there's a problem because who's going to pay that debt? They're expecting the government to step in. It probably will because nobody wants to see that kind of default. So there you go. But it's something to watch, and I think it's something that you need to pay attention to. Again, outside forces in the U.S. affecting not only mortgage interest rates, but the liquidity overall. Like, for instance, what happens if the large banks here in the U.S. stop lending money or curtail their lending? And usually what happens is they up the standards by which you have to qualify for either a mortgage or a business loan. If they up that standard by requiring a higher credit score, more assets, more money down, it's going to kill the real estate market. Now, the real estate market during the COVID pandemic has been one of the brighter spots in the economy. We've seen now, let me quote you some numbers. These are hair-curling numbers, okay? Here we go. So Fannie Mae came out with these last week. These are numbers of what the mortgage market is currently. In 2021, $4.33 trillion. Now, during 2007 and 2008, the numbers for the entire mortgage marketplace were about $3 to $3.5 trillion at the height. Now, in those days, that was unbelievable. Last year, we were dealing with $4.5 trillion. This year, it's been trimmed to $4.33 trillion. So $1 trillion in 10 to 12 years is a huge jump. When the pandemic hit and the mortgage originations fell to nothing in March, that number was projected to be, if it stayed that way, to be about $1.5 trillion. So we've added $3 trillion to the mortgage marketplace since the pandemic hit in March of 2020. It's a huge number. Now, the projections, because everyone believes that we're going to see mortgage interest rates rise, and that's going to kill the market, not kill the market, but certainly if we're talking about lowering originations around the country to the tune of $1 trillion, how many mortgages is that? $300,000 each. Okay. The prediction by Fannie Mae for 2022 is $3.25 trillion. A little more than $1 trillion less in originations. But on average, still about, a trillion to $1.5 trillion more than an average year. We're still going to be firing on all signatures. And the on all what? What are we firing on? We're firing on cylinders. Thank you. I know. I don't know anything about cars. I hope that's a car thing. All right. So I'm kidding. I do. But anyway, so we're firing on all cylinders at that. And that number is a big number. If $3.25 trillion were in any other decade, this would be the largest mortgage origination ever. But since we've been through the pandemic and since mortgage interest rates have fallen so much, that's why we have origination the way it is. We still have $1.5 million people in active forbearance. 3% of all loans are still in forbearance, but that number is down hugely from 5.5 million when it started. Labor and materials depress housing costs, and the gap in appraisals from white to white-owned properties to persons of color is 5 to 9%. Freddie Mac came out with a report which stated that there is an issue and they have to look into it. We've talked about that on this show many times, about the disparity between people of color, black-owned, Hispanic-owned, Asian-owned homes in the appraisal market and why that is. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in and listening to the show, and we'll see you next time.
To the Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.